that the latest one, when the latest one was triggered after Gina Amini was killed, I think a lot of times, because of the way that especially the diaspora in the United States interprets it, it gets kind of blurred and mixed up. But that's what I try to do, is all these uprisings over the last 15 years, a lot of them have to do with austerity and neoliberalism as well as authoritarianism.
Right. And yeah. And as you rightfully point out, and you have a couple of great paragraphs about this, gendered oppression, right? You could view it simply as like a cultural issue or a civil liberties issue, you know, the donning of the garb and the religious police. But there is like a deep political economic essence to gendered oppression as it ties to capitalist accumulation, the whole realm of social reproduction of society, the double shift, you know, that Iranian women are more and more taking on, similar to women in the West. So to isolate it and say it's like merely gender does a great injustice to the totality of capitalist social relations.
Of it all. Yeah, definitely. And it's pointing, you know, a lot of times people, including people on the left, it's very shocking to me that people who call themselves Marxists even can't seem to fathom contradiction.
Yeah.
In a society.
Well, that's why you spent all those years on critical theory, and I think it's really helped. I want to ask an important question now, and this is going to tie into a lot of what we're talking about right now. You say in the piece that there is an authentic revolutionary movement and culture that now exists in Iran, and we've seen like the bubbling up of that as it comes to us in the Western media, which we know there's a certain valence on that. What is the nature of this revolutionary movement that you're talking about? And is it primarily a bourgeois democratic one, or is there some socialist content to it?
That's a good question. And that's sort of what I wanted to get across. Let me think of how to sort of put this. There's, just like there was in 79, there's a broad popular opposition. But there is a left in Iran, you know, and it's not like necessarily, you know, an easily identifiable one with flags, you know, because you can't have left-wing political parties in Iran.
Right.
Workers' organizations, there's workers' organizations, but they're all tied to the state. You can't have independent workers' organizations.
Like China.
Yeah.
Or the United States, for that matter.
Yeah, but no, very much so. I wish I say how similar they are, because Iran does have a lot of institutionally democratic features, and they operate, right? And elections, when they have elections, they are more or less open elections. But now here is where the but is. The scope of choice gets so narrowed,
right,
by the time it comes, that you can have a free election, right, and be like, look, we have a free election. But really, it's not. And in the United States, it similarly just operates different.
Absolutely.
There it gets vetted by... in Iran, it gets vetted by the kind of like a party apparatus, right?
Yeah.
Or the equivalent of one. Here, it's commercial interests.
Right.
Will narrow it down. And then you're presented by Coke and Pepsi.
Yep.
And you get to have a choice. And you know, Iran is a bourgeois state in a similar way.
And Great Britain works the same way within their system. Sure. And of course, too, you know, for all the hand-wringing about the Russian elections, they seem pretty honest. You know, it's just that, as you said, in a similar way, in a different way from the United States or Iran, certain choices are left off the ballot. In Russia, it just happens to be like a government ministry that says these candidates are too tied to like Western NGOs and like, you know, liberal interests or whatever. So every single state does this. So what you're saying is there is some content to Iranian democracy within the small stratum of choices that exist under the Islamic Republic.
To be a candidate, you have to get vetted, and they don't have to have any reason to sort of scratch you off. You know what I mean? And his name put off. So, and you have to fulfill a certain criteria, which you have to be ideologically on the good. That's very important. You know what I mean? You have to be like ideologically like in line, or, you know, you can't just be like, hey, I want to run for city council.
You
know what I mean?
You can't be Howie Hawkins, or you can't be Jill Stein. You got to be Joe Biden or Donald Trump.
To the election time, you can run a free election.
Right.
You know, now the reason I brought up all that post-war neoliberalism is because this is what I just suggest to anyone who considers themselves someone on the left and is looking at Iran. And I had mentioned that, you know, sometimes we become geopolitical determinants. I think when you look at an uprising, you have to ask two things before people jump to calling something an orange revolution.
Right.
You have to ask, does this have anything to do with the real material conditions in Iran? Because people act as if everything would be hunky-dory, just like I said with the 53 coup. Mm-hmm. Unless some CIA agent comes and says, hey, you want to risk your life to fight the guards in the streets?
Right.
You know what I mean? Obviously, a lot of these conditions that people are completely ignorant of have to do with the contradictions of capitalist crisis that are making themselves more and more manifest daily in Iran, as much as in the United States, as much as in, you know, a lot of countries in the world.
Yeah.
Pretty much every country in the world in their own way.
Yeah.
And Iran is no different in that sense. And I think to ignore that really is a kind of, it's really a problematic way to see the world. I know I've used the word orientalist enough. You can use anything. You could say it's a romantic way, it's a fetishized way, it's a reified way, but it doesn't see a society as a real society.
Right.
It sees it as a caricature of a society in which the ideological pronouncements of some demagogic politician overrides all historical materialist analysis. And the fact that people call themselves Marxists who take this approach is a cruel joke.
That dynamic has been one of the most frustrating things, I think, for me personally to see over the last several years. And I'm not sure why you even put the Marxist label on yourself if you don't take class seriously, if you don't do what you did in this article. It's, I guess it's a cachet thing. I don't know.
Well, I mean, one thing I want to say is that even dress codes and religious laws have a class basis. Hmm. When Gina Amini was murdered by the police, now I think what some people don't realize, especially when you had some campus types who were like, she didn't get killed by police, she died. You know, they try to find all sorts of ways to say that the police didn't kill her. It's irrelevant, right? Because like George Floyd, people didn't need that to happen for them to be angry at police brutality.
Right. It was a symbol that sparked it off.
100%. She was the symbol that sparked it off. Nobody was all of a sudden in an uprising because they felt angry simply about hijab laws, right? It was the fact that the police can pick you up on any pretext. It could be bad hijab. It could be you're listening to your music too loud in your car. It could be, you know what I mean?
Yep.
There's like 100 reasons why those guidance patrols harass young people all the time. Now, she was young. She was a woman. She was Kurdish. She was from Sabiz, which is, people don't know, it's a kind of industrial sort of town that has a long history of radical labor organizing, as well as one of the big cities that jumped off. So she checks all the boxes, right? Ethnic minority, woman, young, right? From a working class town, right? So to people, particularly to ethnic minorities, to women, to young people, whoever has been sweated by a cop who stands there and says, hey, come here, you know, and find some arbitrary reason, right, to give you a hard time. And there's no shortage of kids who took in one in the side of the face by an angry cop they talk back to, right? Which is likely what happened to her. And that's what caused the jump off, right?
Yeah,
it was because it was sort of symbolic of that. Now, guidance patrols are not uniform everywhere. Now, I can't go to Iran, so I hear everything from, I have a lot of cousins and family live there. And you can have a great life in Iran. I also don't want to make people think that it's some kind of like Taliban-esque situation. Mm. Like North Tehran, it's like you're hanging in Beverly Hills or any other like if you've got money and you don't have to pay rent, you could have a great time. I know lots of people who go to Iran and they have a wonderful time and they party it up. If you're a working class person, right, and you got to pay rent in Tehran, which is one of the most expensive cities in the Middle East,
right,
inflation is up, and those guidance patrols don't hang out in the really bougie neighborhoods of northern Tehran.
They're not,
like, you know how they have like rich kids of Dubai? There's a rich kids of Tehran, right, too.
They're not busting like the Berlin style, like underground, Tehran Berghain, for example, right?
What's that?
That's like a famous club in Berlin. I'm just imagining partying.
I've known people who've gone to Iran. They have underground parties. They have all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
But when you go there, you'll see like women barely have their hijab hanging. Social mores are loose. Because those are the kids of people who have connections with the state. They're rich. They can pay off cops. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Those areas are known for being less, just like here, right? You know, police brutality, you go to the really rich, wealthy areas, kids get away with a lot more, right? And Iran's no different. Mm-hmm. And there's places I know, because I have cousins who are totally unpolitical, you know what I mean? And they're like upper middle class kids, mm-hmm. partying. And you can have a sort of great time, right? And there's kids who live in those areas completely oblivious, right, to the problems that are happening in the country, you know?
I want to say, like, you mentioned the George Floyd uprising before, and like with the George Floyd uprising, the uprising we were talking about when this woman was killed ended with some motions of the state saying there might be some reforms. Has there been anything substantial since then?
No, but you have to understand that with all of these sort of laws now, there's always a kind of push and pull, right? There's times where things become a little bit more relaxed, and then there's times when the grip comes tightened, right? They did for a little bit say that they were kind of relaxed, from what I hear, but then in certain other areas, things get tightened. So it depends on where you live. It depends on where you are. If you are in one of the more prominent, rich, if you're in some rich shopping mall in Tehran, you might be like, oh, I came here. I didn't see any cops pulling people into their vans or any of that. You know what I mean? And that happens. Like, tourists will go, oh my God, I didn't see any problems. Then you go working class area, you go to the Kurdish areas, you go to the Baluchi areas. It's like militarized zone, you know? So there's always
this
kind of differences and contradictions.
If part of what you were trying to do with this article and in this episode was trying to make us understand like how not radically different, how in fact in many cases very the same the capitalist society in Iran is to a place like the United States, I think you've done a great job.
Thanks. I mean, that's always what I've sort of try to do, is not to fall into those Orientalist trappings and to show that it actually shares a lot of the contradictions that any capitalist state, you know, particularly a capitalist state that isn't on the extreme periphery of the world system, but also isn't as in a core of the system, you know. But that's important to note, is that all this police brutality exists, all this repression exists, and there's also a world of ultra wealthy Iranians that are completely oblivious to any of this. You know,